Hello and welcome to the Lost Skills Podcast, where we believe if the women don't find you handsome, they should at least find you handy. This is episode 22. Well, welcome back everybody. It was a pretty long weekend for me, that's why the show's a little late this week coming out. I was up at my dad's cutting some firewood and cleaning up some of the storm damage that we had up there. Boy, some of them trees were pretty big. It's pretty hard to get a road through there just to fill the truck up. It was pretty hectic. I had to get the wood splitter up there, and then I had to take a trailer up there and with the truck. Then I cut a load of wood, and then I came home. I had to take my motorcycle up to my wife's grandma's where they're having an estate sale, and they were putting it up for sale for me. So it was a pretty busy Friday for me. Then Saturday, I finally got some time to go in the workshop and clean everything up, and now I can actually park a car back in there again. Oh, it was getting messy. It was really getting to me. I wanted to build some shelves for inside the garage, but I didn't have any room to lay anything out. But I finally got it all cleaned up and swept up, and oh my God, what a mess. That's all I gotta say. I took about 3 5-gallon pails worth of sand and garbage out, and 2 pails worth of oil-soaked floor dry, because I split a motor and transmission that had been laying on the floor for a while, and I had transmission fluid all over the place. I also got around to building myself a radio for at work, which consisted of a car stereo, a computer power supply that had been rewired to make 12 volts, the old tin off the computer tower, and a couple of 6x9 speakers. And I had it all working and everything. I need to get a car antenna, and I need to get a car cigarette lighter. I'm going to put a lighter port out the side of it, and also the computer source will supply 5 volts, so I'm going to put 2 USB plugs in the side of it so I can charge my MP3 player and stuff. It was a pretty interesting build, except for the fact that I don't have an air compressor because it's on the Fritz. I got to take it apart and work on it. So cutting the holes and everything kind of sucked. I had to drill around it and then, you know, knock out the inner part of the holes. But I got her done and all painted, and I'll probably post a picture of it up on Facebook on the Lost Skills Podcast page so that everybody can see how it turned out. So I was thinking that since I went through wood stoves before, and then I went through outdoor wood stoves specifically, maybe I should do a show on how to pick the right firewood and some tips and stuff for cutting it. What I'd like to say to everyone is that cutting firewood can be treacherous if your mind isn't fully engaged in what you're doing. When I was out cutting wood Friday, we were cutting some trees down, and I got one that was hung up, which is called a widowmaker. And usually when I hang up a piece of wood, I just start cutting chunks out of the bottom, and you can get the tree to stand upright again, and it'll fall over. Well, when I did that this time, it fell right on top of my foot. It hit my leg and skinned my leg up and bruised it up pretty good now, and it pinned my foot right to the ground, and boy, did it take me by surprise. It was a good thing I had steel toes on, or I would have probably went in for a broken foot. Luckily, I still had my chainsaw in my hands, and that there were other people there. Otherwise, it could have been pretty bad if you would have dropped the chainsaw or something. You couldn't reach it, because I was stuck. I couldn't move. I couldn't push the tree over or nothing. So that's just a little story to remind everybody, if you are going to cut wood, please do it safely. Accidents even happen to the best of us. I've been cutting wood for quite a while. So the first subject I'd like to talk about a little bit is buying firewood. In most communities and rural areas, firewood is generally available in the round or split to size. It may be purchased or delivered by individuals in the business. Firewood ads are frequently seen in the classified section of local newspapers. Some sawmills and furniture manufacturers also sell wood residues for fuel. When purchasing fuel wood, it is important to understand what and how much the seller will deliver. A common measure of small diameter wood suitable for fuel is a standard cord. A cord is a pile of wood, bark, and air spaces 4 feet high by 4 feet wide by 8 feet long, or 128 cubic feet. The amount of wood received will vary somewhat with the way it is piled. A cord of loosely piled wood will contain less than a uniformly stacked one. Firewood is frequently sold in quantities less than a cord. For example, the seller may deliver a face cord or a rick. A rick is a pile of wood 4 feet high, 8 feet long, and of variable width. Ricks are often sold as cords, so beware when you're buying. Wood is also sold by the pickup truck load. Trucks with the standard bed measuring about 5.5 feet by 8 feet by 20 inches deep, loaded level with the sides, will contain a little more than one half cord. Some trucks have smaller beds, 4 by 6 feet by 20 inches deep, and will carry about a third of a cord when filled level with the sides. Wood can also be sold on a weight basis, although little firewood is sold by weight. It may be more logical compared to selling by the rick cord or pickup load of wood. The amount of heat given off and the value of the wood for fuel is directly proportional to the dry weight of the wood. The more dry weight per volume, the more heat will be produced. In the pulpwood industry, it is often assumed when a full cord of wood with round 8-foot bolts contains only 80 feet of solid wood. Since firewood is generally cut to much shorter lengths, split, and contains some smaller diameter material mixed in, it is usually carefully piled. A cord may contain more than 80 cubic feet. Therefore, the weight of a cord of firewood can be determined by multiplying the weight per cubic foot times 80 or more cubic feet of solid wood per cord. If you figure it out with these figures, they should only serve as estimates. The weight of wood varies widely, even within the same species. It is best to develop a weight data for each particular species on a local basis. Dry wood has a higher fuel value and may command a premium price. In some species with high moisture content, the fuel value will nearly double by air drying. Look at the ends of the pieces to determine if the wood is dry. Seasoning checks, which are open splits, will be clearly evident on the ends of at least partially dried wood. These checks are a result of natural shrinkage of the wood as it dries. If the wood has been seasoned outside, it will be somewhat discolored. It should not smell sappy. The wood should be hard and sound. Decayed wood has a low fuel value and, when dried, will feel light and burn rapidly. So now here are some firewood cutting do's and don'ts. Some people may prefer to cut their own firewood. With the advent of chainsaws, wood cutting is not nearly as difficult as before, but it is probably more dangerous. Proper safety precautions should be exercised in felling trees and the use of hand tools and power equipment. Even in urban areas, wood is sometimes available for the asking. Check when you see a wooded lot being cleared or a shade tree being cut. The best time to look is after a severe storm. Many individuals own wooded property for recreational or investment purposes. Remove all dead and dying wood from these areas first, remembering to seek permission. Forest land frequently contains poorly formed cull trees and trees of undesirable species, which are little if any economic value. In fact, many forest landowners pay to have cull trees killed with herbicides to make room for more desirable trees. In addition to the cull trees, such species as ironwood, blue beech, dogwood, and locust have little value to the lumber industry. They are usually removed to make room for more valuable trees. Trees of desirable species, which are straight, sound, and relatively limb-free, may have a greater value if left for future timber sales. Another likely place to obtain fuel wood is from treetops and recently logged woods. These tops are as good for fuel as any other tree part. And now here are some tips for drying your wood. To allow for proper drying, firewood should be cut at least one full summer before anticipated use. I usually don't worry about it because I have an outdoor wood burner, but some people have indoor wood burners should. And usually if you cut it in the spring, it's good by the winter. So that's just something to keep in mind. None of this is really set in stone. Since smaller chunks of wood dry faster than large chunks, the wood should be cut and split to final dimensions as soon as possible. Pile the wood at least 6 inches off the ground to prevent decay and allow proper drying of the bottom layers. To achieve the most rapid drying, the wood should be neatly piled in single rows, fully exposed to the sun and the wind. Fuel wood stored in damp, shaded places or damp basements will dry very slowly and may even decay. Covering the top of the pile will also encourage rapid drying. If polyethylene is used as a covering, it should not extend down over the sides of the pile since it will cut off air movement and thus slow down the drying rate. Wood should not be stored against the side of buildings. Exposure to wind and sun is limited in these areas, reducing the drying rate. Wood stored close to buildings increases the risk of insect infestations or decay problems to the building. When I pile my wood up, I have it in like four rows, and I leave about 6 inches to a foot between each row when I stack them, and that gives me plenty of air circulation to dry my wood. That's another thing to think of. And now I'd like to talk a little about creosote. Chimney fires result when creosote deposits ignite and burn, usually during a very hot fire. Creosote deposits occur when unburned gases condense in stovepipes or chimneys. If a chimney fire does occur, limit the air supply to the fire, discharge a fire extinguisher into the stove, and call the fire department. A multi-purpose dry chemical, class A, B, or C fire extinguisher is preferred. This type is appropriate for other home fires as well. Creosote deposits can be removed from the prefabricated metal chimneys with specially manufactured wire brushes available from stove dealers and some hardware stores. Heavy chains or other weights and cloth bags worked up and down in square rectangular masonry chimney can also be effective. Or special cleaning devices can be made using stiff brushes for individual chimneys. Chimney sweeps are also available for hire in many communities. The amount of creosote which develops can also be reduced by burning dry wood in a small hot fire rather than a smoldering one. Refueling at frequent intervals helps. When refueling a stove, allow for the fire to run hot for about 10 minutes to heat up the fuel in the chimney. Short stovepipes and chimneys located on inside walls will heat up rapidly and thus help prevent creosote condensation. So now we're going to talk about actual firewood itself. Assuming you have a choice of wood types when you purchase your supply of firewood for home heating, there are some woods that burn hotter and longer than other firewood, and that can greatly improve the efficiency of your fireplace or stove. Hardwoods. Hardwoods such as maple, oak, ash, birch, and most fruit trees are best burning woods in terms of a hot and longer burn time. These woods have the least pitch and sap and are generally cleaner to handle. However, hardwood firewood is generally more expensive than softwood, but that is offset by how much longer they burn. Softwood firewood is the cheapest to buy in terms of burn wood. Fir is the best, and other softwoods include pine, balsam, spruce, tamarack, alder, and poplar. Softwoods tend to burn faster and leave a finer ash. They can be messy to handle, especially pine, spruce, and balsam, and they cause creosote to build up quickly in your chimney. Do not burn green wood. It will not produce heat, only smoke and creosote. Stack your wood for an efficient air circulation, top cover only, and make sure it's thoroughly dry before burning. So now I'm going to look at the ones I've mentioned a little more in depth. I have this nifty book I got from the Wisconsin DNR called Forest Trees of Wisconsin. It was originally put out in 1932, I do believe. A lot of times if you go to your local DNR office, they will have a book of this type and they give it out for free. It's actually kind of just a soft paper pamphlet, but it's about 60 pages long, so it has quite a bit of information in it. If you want to see it in PDF, you can go to the Wisconsin DNR website and look through their PDFs, and it's also in there if you don't want to go to a DNR office. So first off, let's start with the maples. There's red maple, silver maple, and sugar maple. The hardness of these woods do vary a little bit, but they're all pretty much the same. Here's how my book describes the makeup of the tree. Its wood is light brown, strong, and fairly hard. It has an even texture, rather brittle, easily worked, decays readily when exposed to weather or soil, occasionally used for flooring, furniture, and fuel, and often mixed with red maple for commercial purposes. And then you have the trees in the oak family, which are black oak, bur oak, northern pin, hills or jack oak, and red oak, swamp white oak, or regular white oak. So the basic description for the red oak family is the wood is light reddish brown heartwood, hard, strong, coarse, used for construction, finish of houses, furniture, and fuel. Best logs are largely cut in a veneer. And next is the ash family. There's black, green, white, and mountain ash. The wood is brown, sapwood of lighter color, coarse grain heavy, not as strong or valuable as green or white ash. Easily separated into thin layers, finishing excellent material for basket, hoops, and etc. Also used for cabinets, making fence posts, and fuel. In the birch family, you have paper birch, river birch, and yellow birch. Birch wood is hard, strong, tough, light in weight, brown tinged with red heartwood. Nearly white sapwood used for spools, toothpicks, toys, handles, pulp paper, flooring, firewood, and interior finishes. In the elm family, you have the American elm, the rock elm, and slippery or red elm. The wood is a close-grained, compact, strong, light reddish brown with thick, light-colored sapwood used for agriculture implements, stills, ties, hockey sticks, and furniture and fuel. In the hickory family, there is bitternut hickory and shagbark hickory. The wood is a light brown heartwood with nearly white sapwood, heavy, hard, tough, very strong, used largely in manufacture of agricultural equipment, tool handles, makes good fuel and best of all woods for smoking meats. Nut is an important source of wildlife food. And that's a list and kind of a description of the best hardwoods for burning. Now let's look at some softwoods. In the pine family, we have jack pine, red pine, or known as Norway pine, and white pine. Pine wood is light and soft and not strong. It is close-grained, clear pale brown with thick, nearly white sapwood, primarily a pulpwood species, but also used for lath, box material, and lumber. In the spruce family, we have black spruce and white spruce. Spruce wood is light, strong, soft, straight-grained, yellow, white in color, used in the manufacture of various products, most important which is paper. Largest trees are sawed in the lumber and used for general construction. They are planted quite extensively for ornamental purposes, windbreaks, shelter belts, and ranks high as a Christmas tree. There is also the balsam fir, whose wood is light brown, soft, not strong or durable, coarse grain, used mainly for paper pulp and as Christmas trees. Then in the cedar family, you have this northern white cedar and the red cedar. The wood is red, fine grained, soft, weak, fragrant, and very durable, used for interior woodwork, closets, chests, lead pencils, posts, and poles. In the poplar family, we have aspen, the big tooth, quaking aspen, and balm of gleed, which is a balsam poplar. Poplar wood is soft, not very strong, close grain. The heartwood is light brown, sapwood is white, used for pulp boxes, packing cases, and rough lumber. And it is also used as firewood. So there's a list of a few trees. All the hardwoods are the best ones for burning in an indoor wood furnace. It's not an all-inclusive list of the hardwoods because it would just take too long. There's apples, trees, plum trees. There's all kinds of fruit trees that go into that group. So I'm going to put up a list, and it'll be in the show notes so everybody can kind of look at that. And the softwood list is mostly for those of us who have outdoor wood burners. Although, I do have a friend that he burnt cedar for an entire two winters, I think. They had a beaver pond back behind their house with some really huge cedars that were standing in the pond that were dead for years. And they drove their tractor right out on the ice. They cut the trees down and brought them back and split them up and burnt them in their wood stove. And they never had problems with any creosote in their chimney at all, but that stuff was just dry and you were shoveling it in steady. So other softwoods can be burnt. You just have to fix the fire a lot more. The same goes with poplar. You can burn it in an inside wood stove. You just have to make sure it's very well dried, otherwise it just smokes a lot. Another thing I'd like to say is that poplar is one of my favorite woods for burning in an outdoor wood burner because you can carry a log that's pretty good size and you don't have to split everything up. I personally cut them down and sometimes I throw them right in a wood stove when I bring them home, so there's no drying time whatsoever. So I've hoped I've answered some of your questions about getting firewood and what to do with it and what types are good for burning. If anybody has any questions that they want me to answer, feel free to send me a message on Facebook or send it to my email at lostskillspodcast@gmail.com. And if you have any show ideas, email them too. I'll be more than happy to do an episode on something that you want to learn about. So with that pretty much ends today's episode. So until next time, keep your stick on the ice.